You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Ball Talk of Liberty podcast. This is episode number 320 of Eastern Trans Favorite Podcast. I'm Jeremiah Morrill. Dakota Davis is off keeping the lights on for the people of Greenfield, Indiana, or I guess turning them back on. He's not keeping them on. They've gone out. He's trying to get them back up and running. So no co-host today, but we do have noted underpaid executive video producer, regional winning. Coach of Newcastle Youth Sports.
Participating.
Did you win anything? What can we give you an award for?
I have no idea.
All right. Coach of the year, Zach Burcham.
Yeah. Assistant coach.
Assistant.
Shirt says helper Zach. I'm helper Zach.
We'll take it. You're definitely our helper. We are going to be talking with the mayor candidates today. On my right, screen left, is Mayor Greg York, the current mayor of the city of Newcastle. And on the right, screen right, my left is his challenger, Clay Morgan. We're going to be talking through what's going on in the city, what happens. We're voting in just a few days. The election is Tuesday, wrapping up the candidate series. Special thank you to the patrons that help us get on the air each and every week. You can get bonus content and be a part of the show at any level. Jump on patreon.com/ballsogofliberty. Extra audio. You get a copy of the show notes. And if you donate $50 or more a month, you and or your business get a shout out at the top of every episode. Right now, those folks are Christy Avery up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, with her Norwex sponsorship. If you need any cleaning supplies, you hit Christy up. John Phillips or Jonathan Phillips, longtime supporter of the program. Andy Moore, Buick GMC, and Anthony Meyer, who has his independent different breed trucking company working nationwide. But he cares about Henry County, Indiana, so he's listening to Boss Hog from the truck right now. And special thank you to the candidate series sponsors, Weiland Flowers and the Slick Pickle Sanitation. Really happy to have you guys be a part of the program as well. Going to get right into it here and talk to the candidates. Let's meet Mayor York. If you want to tell us about yourself, little bio, history, sure. And whatever you want to start us off. This is all entirely conversational. We don't have time limits. We're going to make sure everybody's got enough time to talk, and nobody's going to be rushed in anything. So we got all the time in the world.
Well, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure to be on the show. This is the first time, but nice being here. Born and raised in Newcastle, went to school in Newcastle, raised my kids in Newcastle, now bringing my grandkids through Newcastle, played sports here. All my kids played sports here. I've always been a participant in every activity that goes on in Newcastle, so it's always been home, it's always going to be home. Love the traditions that Newcastle has. People don't realize that we have the largest Memorial Day parade in the state of Indiana on Memorial Day. And love to go to the track. And I often wonder what people do out of state that doesn't have Memorial Day or doesn't have a 500 race. You know, so it's exciting to be from Newcastle. Love the activities that we have. I've always been the first one to beat the drum about all of our men's, women's service groups that provide opportunity for kids. It doesn't matter if it's a sport or if it's the band or what it is. Our men's and women's service groups here in Newcastle have always supported the youth of this community. And that's why I just feel like there's not a better town to raise a family in than Newcastle.
All right, and then let's hear from Clay. Give us a little introduction. I know you've been on the program before, but for those listening for the first time, to get to know you a little bit and maybe some of your motivations for running.
Yeah, so I own MVP Barbershop, as you know. I have an associate's degree in psychology. I served on the Henry County Council for 9 years. I served as an advisor to Congressman Luke Messer, married my high school sweetheart. We've been married for almost 27 years and have five sons. And one of the things that inspired me to continue to run and stay local was that as I began to watch, I know this might not make sense to some, but I watched the way of the nation, and it just seems like we're headed for some troubling times. There's a lot of dysfunction in our federal government. The economy is teetering. A lot of people are struggling financially. It's like me and my wife, we have more money now as far as numbers than we've ever had in our life, but we're still paycheck to paycheck again because everything has went up so much. And so as I see those things happening, it inspires me to look at our local community and say, how can we prepare our local community for some future events that may take place in the nation? And maybe a bad analogy, but I kind of look at it like we see a hurricane coming. So how do we prepare so we can weather the storm?
All right. And Mayor York, tell us your motivations. You've been serving, this is eight years now, or 12 years.
Well,
completing 12 years. Tell us, 12 years is a heck of a long time for public service, not community service, public service. Communities. Might feel like community service. But what the motivation to seek a fourth term?
Very fortunate. I've been in business of some kind. I'm a salesman. I was a salesman before I became mayor. I'll be a salesman after I'm mayor. It was very, very simple. I was motivated to run for mayor simply because of classmates in school, friends in school would come back and say, man, Newcastle just isn't growing. The downtown, it's empty. And when you're in the forest, you get used to seeing the trees and you get comfortable and you get complacent. So, I mean, without a doubt, the thing that motivated me the most to run for mayor was to the community had been good to me. I felt like it was time for me to give something back to the community. And in sales, I traveled a lot, out of state, in state, and saw a lot of things that other communities were going through. So probably one of the highest compliments that I get is when classmates come back or when friends that I went to school with come back and say, man, I see these changes happening. It's exciting to see downtown alive again. So it was a no-brainer. I don't like politics, and I don't like politicians. I've tried to run the city as close to business as possibly can, and been in sales and been in construction my whole adult life, and just felt like there was something I could give back to the community.
All right. So if you're a patron, you've got a copy of the show notes, kind of an episode guide, and it's everything's conversational, but it kind of gives us an itinerary as to where we're planning on the conversation going tonight. The first section that we're wanting to talk about, and we'll start with you, Greg, since we're over here, is how, particularly with small businesses, but how does the mayor interact with small businesses in the community and finding ways to grow the small business base?
Well, actually, we have 15 new businesses on Road 3. We have 13 new businesses downtown with two or three more going to open within the next 6 months. Very much involved. I have talked to Fazoli so many times that they don't even take my calls anymore because they say Newcastle's too small.
So it's recruiting. You're outwardly recruiting different companies, different businesses, and interfacing with them.
I've had a relationship with the owner of Culver's, and he's from Rushville, actually, and is based out of Noblesville now. And I talked to him, and he said, I think it's time. So within 2 months, he had purchased land. He had got all his numbers put together, and within 6 months, he had started breaking ground with a new store. So that number, that's not businesses moving. That's new businesses. So Harbor Freight, but as I hate to say it, I would go to either Muncie or Anderson just about every weekend to Harbor Freight. So we have other business men, business women, business people in Newcastle that own properties that that believe in our community and recruit, have bought shopping centers and are recruiting national brands to come to town. And that's been very exciting that we have a lot of people pulling in the right direction, in the same direction right now.
All right. So Clay, talk to me about, obviously you're a small business owner yourself, how you view the mayor's office and interfacing with small businesses, maybe some of these national brands, bringing them to town and encouraging growth.
Yeah. Well, as the mayor said, I mean, you're the face of the community. You're the one that's recruiting. You're the one that's out there meeting and greeting and people connecting. So, but what I would say to add to it is to just continue to keep it going is to continue to build the confidence, the unity, the competence of your team, everyone around you, all the different players that it takes. It's like when Boar's Head came to town, I was on the county council and, you know, we went through that process and the city went through their process, the county went through their process, and there's probably 10, 15 different boards that it has to go through before it actually takes place. And so, you know, if we can continue that that effort of working together and to build that, again, build the confidence, build the competence among all those team players. Also, I think what will benefit us is if we update and maintain our infrastructure. You know, it's more difficult for the bigger million-plus-dollar investors to come in if you're continuing to struggle with some of your infrastructure. We got to be zoning friendly. We need to do some updating there. We need to be customer friendly, and then of course you got to be willing. Like the mayor said, he's traveling, he's meeting. You got to be willing to work at it. There's no doubt about that. But we also need to, you know, maybe have a business friendly roadmap that takes an investor from A to Z, so we can get that speed to market quicker. I was glad to hear the mayor talk about how fast the Culver's transaction took place. That's a great thing. However, most of the time, it's very difficult to jump through all the hoops, jump through all the red tape. And again, if we had a really good, friendly roadmap to give to an investor to show them, here's point A, here's point Z, here's the steps. And so right off the bat, they know exactly where they're going. So
you mentioned zoning. What kind of zoning changes or adjustments are you hoping that the city could make?
One thing and again, some of this is just based off what I'm seeing from a mile high view, but I feel like we need to, because some of the zoning ordinances and stuff are so old, we need to go through and maybe update some things. Technology has changed, internet, 5G, computer systems, things of that nature, and comb through that zoning process and do some updating for this day and age. I spoke to someone that today that used to work with the city of Rushville, for instance, and they went through a big process of updating their zoning back a few years ago. And what was interesting about that is once they begin to update it, they begin to actually try to work through it, and then they discovered where it didn't work, where it did work. And so that process even became very organic for them. So they were able to move out things that kind of were roadblocks to businesses to make a smoother transition. So just it's a process, but I think we could dive into it and update it for this time that we live in.
So, Clay, you mentioned infrastructure. We'll kind of work into that. The mayor's office and the role as you view for infrastructure planning going forward. I know over the course of the last 2 months, as we've had all of the other city candidates come through, a big part of the infrastructure conversation has been the State Road 3 corridor.
Yes.
Tell us, you know, if there's a Morgan administration, what does the infrastructure side look like for Newcastle?
Well, that project in particular. The way I'm thinking about that is right off the bat, and depending on how the election goes, I would contact, if I end up winning, I would contact a lot of the business owners, managers through that whole corridor, and set up a meeting for the first meeting anyway, for January and begin to talk about logistics, begin to talk about, you know, how people are going to get from point A to point B. How's this going to impact your business? What do you see as future issues? And then one thing we discovered that night when we had the public hearing is they're working off old maps. So they don't even have the Culver's or the BMV, that area, Domino's. I don't even think they had Domino's on the map they're working from yet. So there's got to be some adjustments there too. And then begin to work with NDOT on the issue. One thing I'm concerned about is the signaling, the emergency signaling system, because one of the reasons they say we need to do this is for public safety. So if it's for public safety, then we really need to stir the pot a little bit to get them to also include in this project paying for a lighting system where our emergency vehicles can actually change the light if they're on a run. That way they don't get stuck in traffic. Whereas where Greenfield has an area that they can kind of go around a little bit, Newcastle won't have that. So they fire trucks, ambulance, police will literally be stuck in traffic at a red light for possibly, you know, minutes. And that could be a big deal. So hopefully we can work with NDOT to get that accomplished also.
All right. So, Greg, tell us from your perspective, the infrastructure side, if you want to comment on the State Road 3 project or larger level infrastructure for the city and how you view it from the mayor's office.
You're talking about two totally different things,
right,
when you talk about the State Road 3 project and infrastructure project.
Yeah, right. And we got time. We can do both for sure. I know one is NDOT, right? They're kind of running the show on one, and the other is more the bread and butter of what the city can handle.
For example, the bridge on 38, they put that bridge in, and they inconvenienced us for a year, over a year. It was a year late. So in bartering and begging and arguing and fighting with them, one of the large pieces of this puzzle, we have an investor that wants to buy Westwood Golf Course. And it's a goal of mine to have a water tower out on the land that the city owns, the Mary Wyland land. We have water that goes out to Denny Drive. We have no sewer. Why a mayor would run one utility and not the other utility, I have no idea. But
I had like 3/4 of water and sewer where I live.
Yeah, I was there a few times.
Greg has been digging up my yard for 2 years, personally, trying to do repairs.
And the bad part about that was behind your house on Southview Drive, that was the third highest bacteria creek in all of Indiana. And we had to fix it. There's no two ways about it.
The tomato plants were beautiful, though.
Yeah, it grew well and fast.
Bright green grass.
Back to West 38. During that process, we had them go ahead and on the south side of the road, they bored a water line. So we have a sleeve underneath the water line or underneath the river already when we run new water out there or run it back in. On the west side of the road, which Denny Drive, everybody knows it. It's nothing new. Denny Drive sewer is worse than what White Estates was.
Oh, wow.
To the point that they're gasping. Some of them are in very bad shape, front yards, backyards, both. On the north side of the road, we had them put a sleeve through for a sewer. So we didn't look at that project and say, oh, just put the bridge across, get the bridge up, Russ. We're looking ahead, looking for the future. So we already have a water sleeve and a sewer sleeve put through for the future growth to go west. I feel like one of these days a strong area for Newcastle to grow in will be west.
Indianapolis is going to move east, and our city is probably going to head west.
Well, I mean, you follow the map and follow the traffic. It's not too difficult to figure out. So if we're not ready for that, shame on us. If you go to the east side of town, our water and sewer stops at Stonegate. It dead ends right there. You go to Walmart and go east, it dead ends at Duke Energy. I have a farmer that lives on the east side of the road, says, if I had city water and city sewer out here, I would develop this off in this farmland into housing. If that was already connected, and we already have a contractor that has that pricing put together for us to loop that, to connect that. I feel like I've always been told Newcastle's going to grow to Spiceland. Well, it hasn't happened yet. But I feel like Newcastle would grow to Louisville before it would grow to Spiceland if we could loop that and get city water and city sewer out there. At the present time, Spiceland is the city's largest water account. We have water that goes underneath Road 3, down Road 3, all the way to underneath 70. God has blessed Newcastle with a lot of water and good water, and I feel so sorry for Spiceland. They had 6 wells. They're down to 3. And they have dug test wells. They've tried to redig the wells they've had. They've spent big bucks on trying to get water. And it's like 70 is a dividing line. They've had a very difficult time hitting water. So we already have water down to there. We have a study right now about taking sewer on down further. But then we get up at 400 and 500, that's South Henry's sewage area. So we're not going to encroach on them, but if we can help them out or if they can help us out to recruit a business, we would do that. The biggest thing right now is Boar's Head is they're in process of building right now, doubling in size. Well, I have no idea why any mayor would think that when sewage runs downhill behind Jamestown that they could put it in a smaller pipe, but they did. It goes from 20-inch, and when it got to the Raintree Inn, they funneled it down to an 8-inch, turned it a 90-degree turn, and when you're floating turds down a pipe, you don't like
start to create some resistance.
You don't like, yeah, it starts backing up, not flowing. So we have increased that, and actually, when they were out putting the new road in at Walmart in that little stretch right there, we have prepared and we already have we've already went underneath Road 3. We're on the east side of the road with a 36-inch line. We're underneath all the way underneath Road 3, past Jamestown, behind Jamestown, and it went from a 20 inch to 16 inch going down the hill behind two Spiceland Pike. So at this present time, we have a 36-inch line from the Raintree Inn all the way to the sewage plant, all the way down Spiceland Pike. So I don't know why a mayor would think that, well, that's a good area to put
commercial park. We don't have to say which mayor, but what era would that have been done in? Back in the 50s, 70s, 90s?
I think Jamestown was built in the 70s.
Okay. So it's been 40 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Long time ago.
All right. Any conversation on the city infrastructure side, Clay? I know you shared your ideas on the State Road 3 side.
Yeah. So my concern, and again, obviously, Mayor York has more inside scoop on this. He's been there 12 years. But one of my concerns is with expansion is what are we doing to the hub? So I know that we've had previous issues with our wastewater system that were fixed back a few years ago, but there's still a lot of issues there. And so, you know, one of my concerns just off from, again, a mile high view off the top of my head is I'm wondering what impact all the expansion would have on an already fragile system. So my perspective would be to go in and make sure we shore up the hub and then look to expand so that we don't kind of get the cart before the horse.
Well, that hub is exactly why we got Boar's Head. Our sewage plant, they had already interviewed 43 people, and they had it down to
43 communities?
43 communities. And they came to Newcastle, and they said, if this happens, this will happen very quickly. Yeah. And it did. And the reason that Boar's Head is here today is because we took them a tour through the sewage plant and the volume that they need.
Yeah.
They said, we've never had another mayor proud of their sewage plant before. Now, that sewage plant is needs a $33 million shot in the arm.
Right.
And it's a project in works, and until somebody comes up with $33 million, we have the personnel there that knows that facility like the back of their hand. But we're only using about 33% of the capacity, so we have lot of room to grow.
Yeah.
Do you need new clarifiers? What's $33 million get us? Expansion? What's broken?
Everything. Yeah. All of it.
Yeah, and see, that's the point I'm making. Like, the capacity's there. I've been working with an engineer firm over this past 6 to 9 months, looking at Newcastle's water, the capacity, what we're able to do, what we're not able to do. And like, I was on the council when Boar's Head came to town, and, our water, our availability, our capacity, like the mayor said, was very attractive. But again, on the flip side, there is an issue. We have the capacity, but the systems are wearing out.
There are tremendous opportunities for the community. I was
absolutely
last month. I was at a what's called OTEC, which is like the Ohio Technical Engineering Conference, and I happened to be eating a sandwich with the guy that's like the public works director for Marysville, Ohio, and he's like, we are begging off of they've got data centers. Ohio is full of all of these, like Google, Facebook, mm-hmm. they're all building data centers, and like, we've run out of water. I'm like, what do you need water for a data center? And they're like, for cooling. They build these things and they consume so much water. They're like, we have tapped out of water. That's going to be the thing we run out of for anything else.
Those are things I've over the past year, I've been looking into, asking questions, again, looking at where technology is today, where the world's headed. And I've been asking those types of questions and finding out, do we have the capacity for that? Can Newcastle, are we the type of community that could house some things like that? So that's, again, that's where I found out, yeah, we do have plenty of capacity, but we just have to shore up the working of the system.
So throughout the 2 months we've been having these conversations with the candidates, and I think Lynn Perdue made a really good point last week talking about the existing home stock we have, and we were having this talk about, hey, growing the community versus, you know, 17,000-18,000 people is what we've had as the headcount, the population of Newcastle for a couple of decades. And then you look just to the west, you know, Greg, you mentioned that, you know, west is where it's going to grow, right? 1,000 new building permits in the last year in Hancock County, and we've had 32 in Henry County. Are we ready as a community to start new stick-built homes in city limits or for city utilities to do that so we can grow the tax base and solve some of these other issues?
We've behind the YMCA right now, you know, we've got 40 condos and 40 new homes going up there. We're working with three different properties right now that between the three will probably be somewhere in the neighborhood of 280 homes. So, you got to be shovel ready. You got to have water and sewer to it. Shovel ready doesn't mean there's a field right there that you can start digging. Shovel ready means that they can tap into water and sewer immediately. So, no, we are in process right now of talking to builders and investors that in three different projects. It's around 275 to 280 homes that will be mid price range, anywhere from 275 to 350. That is affordable housing for.
I'm clutching my pearls because 275 is. I am mentally not prepared for houses to not be $100,000 to $150,000 anymore. Well, I know that's not where they are.
For $275,000, you're not going to get much.
No,
for a new home, you're not going to get much for $275,000.
But the demand will be there, and people will buy them, and the community will grow.
The other scary flip side of that. The hospital is working diligently to recruit good doctors. Our hospital is an outstanding hospital, and we don't have one property to show a doctor. in Newcastle. Not one property of the home that they could afford. The type of house that they want to live in. A doctor would have to move somewhere else for us to be able to show them a property that we could entertain them on a tour to. So what I don't want to promote that. Well, you know, you can live south of Muncie. You can live in Muncie. I don't want them to live in Greenfield and drive here. I want them to live in Newcastle.
You want a 47362 zip code.
Exactly.
Yep. Anything on the housing options?
Yeah. Jeremiah, I think I'm more like you. I live in a different world, evidently. I look at these $275,000 to $350,000 homes, and to me, I'm thinking those would be nice homes for a doctor. I've currently been working with a doctor that's been advising me on some certain issues with our community over the past, again, year to 9 months to a year. And the home they live in, they made a comment actually about the pricing of houses, and they looked at me and they're like, wow, that would be a great home for me, you know. And then they talked about the house they live in. So to me, I noticed in the show notes you have, are we a community that needs to be building homes, or are we a community that needs to maybe remodel some older homes? And I think there's room for both, obviously. If a private investor wants to come in and throw some money in the pot, what's happening at Northfield Park, my understanding is it's created in such a way that a lot of the tax revenue can go back into that area to help with the infrastructure in the future. One thing about building all the brand new properties all at one time, all the maintenance also starts coming all at one time. So you have to prepare for that. My son and daughter-in-law, you know, they've been looking around for homes, things like that. And I'm more like you. I'm more in the $100,000 range as a good starter home. So what we're hoping to find is maybe something more in the 70-ish range that we can remodel or something like that. And I think that would be a good use for some of the homes that we have that are empty around town.
And of course, some of those may come available. You get the new $300,000 to $350,000 houses, and all of a sudden, $80,000 to $150,000 house becomes available, and you can.
I definitely don't think it's an all or nothing situation.
All right, want to stop and say thank you one more time here to Wyland's Flowers and Slick Pickle Sanitation for your support of the candidate series. It's been awesome throughout the year. I want to start with you, Greg, on the we've heard a lot about transparency and community engagement and ways the city can make sure that there's visibility in what's happening in city government. What is your view, and how do you think the next 4 years? I know the open door laws have been are requiring now for city meetings to be streamed, which I know the city's done the last couple of years. With Aaron Dickens' work and the live stream, and Dakota's tech support to Aaron, trying to get it on the air, but transparency and community involvement, a great way to start the conversation.
Well, yeah, we've what I consider high tech. Anytime we put it online, that's a huge step up for me. But as far as transparency goes, everything that happens within the city, you can get online and it's at your fingertips. Now, there's the numbers from the State Board of Accounts. It's public information, public knowledge. There's nothing hid there from anybody at any time. You can get on that if you want to see it. If anybody wants to come in and needs a copy of it, they come into the clerk's office and they can get it. I feel like that I'm the most accessible mayor that there has ever been. Anybody wants to talk about anything, they don't have to come to my office to catch me. They see me out on the road, stop and talk, and they do a lot. I get a lot of conversation out on the road. So it's really, with technology today, as high tech as it is, any information that you want, it's at your fingertips. I mean, it's all public knowledge. So do we need to have more meetings as far as updated? We probably could. I am not saying that we're not going to, not saying that we are, but there's a lot of things that could be done.
On the administrative side, I know in the 2 months, it's kind of been like a focus group. I feel like we've run here with council candidates and clerk treasurer folks. we've heard a lot about ordinances being harder to find. Are there ways, and maybe it's not the mayor's office that can do it, but ways the city can try to publish the ordinances and maybe be searchable or easier for folks to understand what the rules are?
Easier for me to get online and find it, or easier for you to get online and
find it? All of the above. I know a lot of us use Beacon, right? The community right. uses Beacon, and you get all kinds of information available there that the government employees use, but then the public does as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have them. All the ordinances are posted. You can get online and find them. Do we need to put it first in line on the city's website? I don't know. If that's the answer, then, you know, we'll move it up the list or make it easier to find. So. There's not a yes answer or no answer to that.
They're all digital. It's not like you have to go get a copy, come into City Hall or whatever. They're all digital. You just have to know how to find it.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Clay, I know this has been a big conversation piece with your campaign. Tell us what transparency and accountability and community involvement mean to your side and your campaign.
Yeah. So something I look forward to is as far as the city web, like the mayor mentioned, the State Board of Accounts and things like that. There's Indiana Gateway. There's Indiana Government State Board of Accounts website. There's a lot of these outside sites that you can go and find information if you know how to look it up. But there's on our city website, there's places that you go, and the first most updated thing you see is from 2013. And so with, again, today's technology, there's no reason why we shouldn't have a fully functional, high-tech, ready website that young people know how to operate and get on, and people in their 20s and 30s know how to, you know, they can maneuver around quickly to find information. You take a look at an example that I could give is the City of Lawrence. You look at their website. It's very good, very good, very streamlined, very transparent, very open. So anyways, we can do some updates, 100% update our website to make it quick, easy, accessible. The other thing is I would like to do, again, with the availability of technology, once a month have an open, maybe a podcast, video podcast. I know we're not Miami, but the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, he does a podcast.
Miami of Florida, not Miami of Ohio.
Exactly, Miami, Florida. And, you know, you can share things that's taking place within the month. You can answer questions. You could have a guest on, maybe a department head, a teacher, someone in the community, someone that's looking for business. I mean, like Francis Suarez, it's Miami, Florida, so he'll have Gary Vee on, looking to invest in Miami. So there's things like that people and
we have Lee Markham. I think they're equals personally.
Exactly. Get Lee on, right? Facebook, everybody's on there, have a good, functional, updated Facebook site. You take a risk there, obviously, because you're going to get some stuff on there that you probably don't want to see or deal with. But and as a government social media site, you can't delete it or block. So, but I think it's good for the people. And one more thing. So I brought an example. I'll hold it up for the camera. This is the City of Lawrence. This is their municipal budget for 2020. It's a textbook looking every city fund. Every balance, everything.
Pull back in front of that mic for me, Claire.
Sorry about that. Everything in the city budget is right here in this book. They have, you can print 10 to 15 of those up. You can have them available at the chamber, at the mayor's office, at the library. And it's readily available at all times. So anybody
they print this after they adopt their budget.
Yes. That is the printed version after the budget. And so anybody can go and look at any department and see the budget for that year. And then also when your website is fully updated and functional, there's PDF versions of that on the website. So, and it just as pretty. And anybody at any time can go on their website, the City of Lawrence, and even pull up the previous month's fund balances for every single city fund, from general fund to the utilities at the end of every month. And it probably takes them a week or two to get it all on there. But like right now, we're in November. I don't know if you could see October's yet, but I know you could see September's. and every city balance. That way nobody's blindsided whenever you find certain information out that you weren't privy to. It's all right there available in a couple clicks.
All right. So on this, the last item I have for us in the transparency and the community, really this is more community engagement focused, but I know from my side, and Greg, you've talked about directions the city may grow. That sounds an awful lot like the comprehensive plan that the city would have. And I know I was involved when Henry County did ours. I was on the steering committee for Henry County's. Can you tell us about the city's comprehensive plan and if you think we need to update or what the process is for bringing that along so that we have community input as to, hey, here's the roadmap for what we want the next 5, 10, 15 years to look like.
We have a comprehensive plan, and we've accomplished a lot of that comprehensive plan, and we add to it. We have a parks comprehensive plan, a five-year plan that we add to it as we accomplish things. We add to it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we go back to the company that we had to pay $50,000 to do it, but we have a comprehensive plan that we work on, and very proud of what the accomplishments that we have, and we continue to add goals to that.
So the community essentially pays for it one time, or buys a plan, and then it's a living document, and you amend it as it goes along. Mm-hmm. All right. Any thought given to the comprehensive plan side?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I've looked through it a little bit, and like the mayor said, there has been some things accomplished. To my knowledge, and I could be wrong, but I think the last one that was done was 2017. So what, 6 years old? Do we need a new one? I think that's definitely a conversation to have with everything that's changed. Do those comprehensive.
It's older than the maps NDOT, the pictures NDOT used to design State Road 3.
Exactly. So,
Got comprehensive plan pre-Culver's and post-Culver's. We got
– Exactly.
It's a landmark time.
Exactly. So do we need a new one? I think it's a conversation to have. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So, Greg, tell us about the financial side. I learned last week that the city versus the way the county operates or the way the state operates, the state adopts a budget every 2 years. City of Newcastle does it every year.
Budget every year.
So you're right in the heart of the budgeting process right now.
No, it just got approved. It's over.
It's done. Now you got 361 days until you do it again, right?
Right.
So what's that process look like? How do we get to where, okay, we've got a budget adopted and you move on? What's that look like?
Well, that's clerk treasurer. That's not the mayor's office. That's clerk treasurer. She gets with the department heads, looks at what they spent last year, what they need up and coming, which there's always a shortfall of what we need. She works very closely with them. And then once she talks to them, gets it on paper, gets with myself, gets with the finance committee, and the finance committee goes over it, and we either adopt it or change it or shift some things around. And we always lived within our budget, and sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's difficult, but we've never overspent our budget, and we work very hard on it every year.
All right. Clay, do you have any comments on the budgeting process? And I know I've heard your campaign speaking significantly about the health insurance side, so I wanted to make sure we had that opportunity to talk.
Yeah. So like the mayor said, according to Indiana code, the budget starts with the clerk treasurer and the department heads. And then similar to the way the department heads in the county would speak to the auditor, process I went through many times. However, then the auditor presented it to the council, who then adjusted the budget. On the city side, it is the mayor that is responsible for the revision and the review of the budget. So the clerk treasurer will get with department heads. They set the budget. They go through it and do however the clerk treasurer sees fit with the department heads. And then it goes to the mayor. The mayor then has the authority over the budget to review and revise the budget. And then once the mayor has had his say or her say over the budget, then the clerk treasurer takes it again according to the mayor's revisions, and then they present that budget to the council. And what a lot of people are learning This has been definitely a year of civics class. What a lot of people are learning is on the city side, the council has very little authority over the budget. They can reduce a line item. They can vote no. If they vote no, it reverts back to the previous year. They cannot transfer funds between different lines or from department to department, whereas on the county side, the county council, we had the authority to do that. We controlled the budget for the most part. And that's similar to how the mayor's position operates on the city side with the review and the revision. As far as the health insurance fund, and the mayor has been open about the concern of that fund. Actually, there's a few things on that fund in particular, because we do hear COVID being used a lot as a reason. But before COVID, that fund was actually around negative $4.9 million. So at the beginning of 2012, there was about $9,000 in that fund. At the end of 2012, there were zero. At the end of 2013, it was about negative $13,000, and it continued to grow. And then 2020 is when everyone found out that it was negative 4.9, and they began to work on a plan. And then later, it was almost negative $6 million. And that was discovered last year in November, and where a couple people in a council meeting even commented they were blindsided by that, because they had already passed the budget, and then they discovered that there was a $6 million deficit in the insurance fund. June 30th of this year, the insurance fund was negative $7.8 million. So it continues to grow. Now, here's the problem. Because you've heard me, everybody's heard me talk a lot about overdrawing and deficits, okay? That all is true. That's even according to State Board of Accounts. We have overdrawn funds. However, one thing, like one of the mayor's recent pieces on the general fund, I've never said the general fund was negative. The general fund has always been positive, but the general fund is one of many funds. So here's, for instance, May 30th of this year, there's bank account one. The city has bank account one. The general fund is one of 72 different funds in that account. May 30th, granted, before the tax draw, of June, May 30th, that bank account had a balance of a little over $1 million to the positive. However, within that account, there were 4 to 5 funds that were overdrawn to the tune of negative $9 million. So it's shuffling money. You may have more money in one fund than the other fund, and so you can pay the bills with the money from the other fund, very similar to when I was on the county council and our insurance fund went negative. We were negative $780,000. So we were able to borrow money from ourselves because we had money in other funds. And then we were able to pay that back within 6 months. And just let me run real quickly here. In 2022, the general fund ended positive $299,000. However, the general fund was overspent by $184,000. So the money that came in last year compared to the money spent, it was overspent by $184,000, but we had money on the front end. So that's how we could end positive. And then another thing, all city funds, when you look at the total of all city funds, that's the government side and the utility side, okay? All city funds in 2022 were overspent by $5.9 million out of all the money that came in and all the money that went out. However, we ended positive with a positive balance because we started the year with $14 million. So it's the trend that we need to be careful of. So another, for instance, and I'll shut up after this and take a breath. But for instance, the government side, if you leave the utility side out, because the utility money has to stay in the utility realm, but the government side, where the government functions, street department, general fund, insurance, EMS, all those things.
There's some latitude for the city to make adjustments.
Yeah. So in 2022, the year-end balance of the government fund, the government side, was $4.1 million to the positive. However, what's concerning is the insurance fund was negative $6.9 million. So you start with the pool of money, and you can function off that pool for so long. But if the spending trend continues, it will just be a few years before there's trouble, because you have to have that revenue coming in to continue to cover that overspending.
So I'm going to work. Let the mayor get back into this, into the conversation here. Is there an ebb and flow to the cash reserves of a city? Is that the way that you view this?
It's there always is, but then November 10th, 15th gets here, and you get the tax draw that changes everything. You go through October, November, things are tight, and you get your tax draw, and it changes everything. Let's go back to infrastructure. We're finishing up our storm separation, which when we did the White Estates project, there was government funds there that we did the
OCRA funds that helped pay for it.
Yeah. Paid it for
when we Office of Community and Rural Affairs.
Yeah.
I always give our guests hell if they use acronyms without saying what they are. So I did it myself there. I caught myself.
So when we did the run the new water and sewer line to the new prison and the new jail for the county, there was funds there from the state. We've been working on the long-term control plan for 15, 16 years now, and there is absolutely it's state mandated. It is not a choice. It has to be done. Separate the storm water from the sewer water, and that's a $22 million project that we have absolutely no choice. Has to get done. Has to get paid for. That'll be done in early 24. So that those dollars will help offset insurance. Now,
the money that paid for that, I assume it was bond. The city had to bond for the wastewater separation dollars, or
some of it,
or some straight out of the
not all of it. No,
so some of
we
it
have
will
to take out of what our water and sewer, our sewer. That does have stormwater fees, and I mean, if you have a roof or have a driveway, you pay a fee for where that water goes to. A lot of people don't like that, but that's we don't have any choice. That has to happen.
If they say I want a convertible house, can I get the stormwater fee taken off?
No, if you have a yard, it's still got to go to a sewer drain somewhere.
All right.
So a single person, there's no one silver bullet. This has got to be attacked from about 12 different angles. If a single person that hires in at Newcastle pays $46 a month for life insurance, for health insurance, not life, health insurance, free doctor's calls, free meds, free x-rays, there's nobody else in America getting the coverage that we have for $46 a month. A married person gets one child or five children, pays $96 a month. So there's got to be some adjustments everywhere. Now, the caveat to that is we're the only one that stayed with it, but we did not do a carve out. The school did a carve out, a spousal carve out. The school did a spousal carve out. The hospital did a spousal carve out. The county did a spousal carve out. And I signed a contract with our city employees that we would not do a spousal carve out for 3 years. Here's the problem. That spousal carve out, that could cause a person, if that person's husband or wife has the opportunity to get insurance at their work, that could cost them $900 to $1,800 a month. Now, you talk about making a difference in a household, in a two-income household. So we've made a commitment to, and we only have 1 year left on that. And as bad as I hate to say it, we're probably going to have to do away with the spousal carve-out. But the people that have taken advantage of this and it has helped the most is our employees.
It may be a $500 or $1,000 a month difference in their budgets.
Can't speculate on that. I mean, everybody's insurance is different. But the situation is we will have money from what we're spending on the long-term control plan. We won't have those bills after early in 24. Our long-term control plan will help offset that. We've got land that we've sold. It's just a good business plan to get that paid down, and it certainly will not take no 18 years to get it paid down. I mean, you have to know a little bit about
so tell numbers and tell us about the land, the cities in the land owning business. What are we selling? Is it like land bank stuff, or is it like future development land?
Land bank is your other question on here, right? About the city has started taking properties out of the tax sale. I'm sick and tired of somebody from Phoenix or Canada buying a property at a tax sale online and not doing their due diligence and finding out that it's not rehabable. And so, you know, they'll pay the taxes on to purchase it. And then when they see it's not rehabable, then they let it go, and it's tied up with them for 3 years in the legal system. So we've started a land bank that the city gets that first opportunity to buy that property at the tax sale. And we ask for the taxes to be forgiven, but we still have to have a title search done on it. So we still have $1,100 in it, in the title search and all the legal fees. So that's been very successful. We've sold 12 properties. We've demoed properties out of that, and it's helped us clean up some lots. But back to the other side of that, the city owns all the land in between Wilburite School and Salvation Army. That was donated to the city years ago. We farm it out and make peanuts on it each year, farming it out. That's one of the properties that we have an investor.
Be sold to a developer for homes to be built or something.
Sold to a developer out of Jeffersonville that wants to come in, put 40 to 50 homes there. We've just sold. We going down to Hillsborough Road, go past the softball diamonds, and we just sold 35 acres there. And we have three or four other properties that we don't need to be in real estate business. We need to sell it and use the money more wisely.
And those are all in city limits, so potentially not.
No.
Can you annex them in before before they go, so they become?
You can. Go ahead. Number one, it's got to be contiguous.
Okay.
You will never hear the word annex come out of my mouth unless there is no homes on it yet.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying is if you've got empty parcels and you say, hey, I want to make these a part of the city so that when somebody builds in there, then you're growing the city, right?
If it's contiguous.
Yeah. Now, so your property at Wilburite is, I assume that one's in the city now.
That is in the city limits, yes. Now, here's what's stupid.
Because somehow Spiceland's contiguous. It looks like Alaska going down State Road 3, that little narrow side, but it's contiguous.
Well, get off on Spiceland Pike. The first two houses are not in the city limits.
Right.
Then it takes a dog leg, and three houses are in the city limits, and then two houses next door to that are not in the city limits. They must not have had straight rulers back in the day when they drew the line.
Good, so the expected good public policy is to, if you're going to annex something in, it's going to be large chunks and it's all going to be a part of the same.
We had a developer that wanted to develop the west side of Spiceland Pike and was pretty much promised that he would have city water and city sewer, and didn't happen. And it cost him big bucks to have to dig wells and put septic tanks in. And so, yeah, there are some areas that it could be beneficial. But you can't let somebody build a house and then say you want to annex them in. That's suicide. Besides that, you said a while ago you need sidewalks. Well, years ago, the city annexed Red River Estates, Red River back there. We just put new roads back there, every one of those roads. But the moral to the story is we still owe them streetlights. We still owe them sidewalks. And, you know, they're incorporated. And there's no way the city will ever be able to finance sidewalks and lights out there.
So in theory, because we've had a lot of sidewalk conversation in the last 2 months on here too, Zach. In theory, you get your sidewalk once for free, and then after that, then you got to pay for it yourself. Is that the way it's supposed to work?
Yes, no. there are if the sidewalk is already there, yes, you own it. It's your sidewalk. If there were sidewalks in White Estates, you would own your sidewalk. Now we have a fund to help build those and repair those sidewalks, but In that particular case, in that neighborhood, there were no sidewalks there. So if the city was going to put sidewalks in, yes, the city would pay for it. Then they own it. But there's not a law saying that you have to provide a sidewalk for them. On businesses, we have said anything contiguous to Road 3 that they do need a sidewalk in front of their all businesses, all new businesses that are developed, whether it's Indiana or no matter where it's at, that they do have to have sidewalks.
All right.
In front of their
location. I took us down a rabbit hole, but I'm just thinking that one day I'm going to get the. This is the time of the year. I'm not jealous that I'm not in city limits, right? I like my low taxes, and I do like my clean city water and my sewers. But we get a hell of a lot of leaves. And I'm so jealous of everybody that can blow their leaves out to the side ditch, and then the magical vacuum truck comes by and sucks up all the leaves for them.
Just mow them.
That's just a, I'm so jealous, and that's what I do. There have been years I light them on fire in the front yard, because I'm in the country.
Did you
rake
them first or just torch the yard?
Leaf blow them, and then little fire pit, and you burn them. But then I left a lot of burn spots in the yard. It's okay. The city reseeded it all when they dug it up anyway. But it was.
Did it help the regrowth? I mean, you
no,
know.
It was pretty well a black spot. So I learned my lesson on that one. But I am jealous of the vac truck because I drive down Main Street and I see everybody gets to blow their leaves out there, and that's the city service that's underrated.
Go to Audubon, and that's every day. I mean, there are St. James, Audubon, and there are some roads that it's not just once a week.
I think if Lee Walker could get rid of. If Lee Walker could get rid of the leaf truck, he probably the leaf back. I think it's a pain in his butt for roads like Audubon, where I live near that road, and Woodlawn's really bad too. And like they can't coordinate, and so they'll blow all the leaves out in the street. And he goes down there, and then the next day it's like even numbers on this day, odd numbers tomorrow, and they just block the road again. It's never ending. I think it takes them like an hour to do one side of the road there. Yeah. And it's going to snow.
All right. Let's start to work into the last segment of our conversation here. And that's the main goals. Clay, I want to start with you on this. What would your priorities be for the next 4 years? The things that you would want to act on quickest or the top of the list for you. What's the go-to?
Yeah. So here's my list. Right, for the next 4 years. And obviously, some of these I can't do single-handedly from the mayor's office, but I'd like to see us develop an emergency mental health facility for adolescents. I know our ER struggles with that right now. We've had young people have to stay there days upon days because they have difficulty finding a place for them. So I'd like to see us develop an emergency mental health facility for adolescents. I would like to see in some form or fashion with a collaboration of some sort to restore the high risk EMS transports again, because again, the hospital is struggling with that right now. It's making it very, very difficult on especially the emergency room and then some of the residents and patients and family members there. I would like to see us do along with updating the website and some of the other technology capabilities that are out there, automatic water bill pay, just where you plug it in and you don't have to worry about it. A few more things. I've already talked about the updated website with city account balances displayed. We talked about the citywide infrastructure. Make sidewalks a priority. Like the mayor said, there's a sidewalk fund. I would like to see us get our financial house in order in such a way that we can actually put more money into that fund, because nothing makes a neighborhood look better than a fresh, good-looking sidewalk that's not crumbling and all out of whack. And with the amount of pedestrian traffic that we have and will potentially have in the future, that will be a big plus. And then one last one is sustainable insurance planning. Again, I went through this process when I was on the county council, and it was a long process, But I do believe that within a couple years' time, working with the employees and their representatives and getting advice from people who have experienced this situation in the past, I think we can work out a sustainable insurance plan that will be a win-win for everybody involved.
All right. Mayor York, the next 4 years, what are the top priorities for you, what you want to tick off in the next four-year term?
But the same priorities that we've had. We've been working consistently on water main breaks and on infrastructure, trying to get it updated, trying to look past our face farther than our nose. We are going to have the next 50 years infrastructure ready for new business, ready for housing, ready for growth, because it's coming. I mean, financially, it's not free. So we've been chopping at it a little bit at a time ahead of time. So we have never won the Stellar grant before, but we've stayed with that Stellar plan. And it's as simple as this. There's no higher compliment than to see people come to town that are excited about the growth and the vitality that's in our community. And that's more than any one person can do. We've got a lot of people that are on the bus and in the right seats on the bus, and they're very excited about what they're doing and how they're contributing to our community. So we've got a plan for Newcastle to move forward and to go forward. And we're going to stick with that plan, and we're going to continue to grow, because I said earlier, when you look west, it's coming our way. And I'm excited to be able to be a part of that growth that we're going to prepare, not for 2 years down the road. We're preparing for the next 50 years. A 36-inch sewer line, that's more than we're going to use in the next 5-10 years.
What I didn't hear either of you talk about, and it's not a city-owned property at all, but I think it would potentially interface with the city, and that's the – this is a conversation we've had for the last 4 or 5 years with the county folk, is the Expo Center, the Henry County Expo Center. And is there anything that the city can do or be involved with to try to get that project complete? I know that there's been a lot of talk, and you've essentially got a half done project that's in the 47362, that I'm told is waiting on city utilities. We've talked about utilities a lot tonight, and that's for both of you. Is there anything the city can do to try to get that project complete and moved along?
Would you build a house and not look into, does it have electricity capabilities? Does it have water capabilities? Does it have sewer capabilities? Does it have
All the utilities available?
Yeah, the first five questions that before you build any kind of facility, whether it's a church or a factory or a home or whatever it is. And I don't know where everybody I'm for that project, but I don't know where everybody comes up with that it's the city's responsibility to run water and sewer to it. Number one, there's not been state-approved plans given to the city saying that it needs a 2-inch line, a 4-inch line, or a 6-inch line. I do know this, the size of the building, it has to have fire suppression, and it has to have a separate water line. They say that they want to have barns, and they want to have cattle, sheep, shows out there. Well, that's either straw, hay, sawdust. Well, there has to be a filtration system put in the sewer system separator before it gets to the city sewer line. I did endorse that with Kathy Hamilton, a letter of support. That was not a letter of financing the project. And from my understanding, the entities that are trying to raise money to finance it, if that goes south, then it's on the county commissioners.
The county owns it, yeah.
So, I mean, why I'm doing something for them to get water across the street, but there's already water across the street. We have water on the east side that's on the west side. We have a 6-inch line that goes to all of Memorial Park, and they reduced it to a 4-inch line because they didn't want to pay for a 6-inch meter. So, you know, there are three or four entities out there that that don't agree on this project. And it's not a city project. Here again, we have city water that comes underneath Road 3 by the lakes. We have city water that goes up 38, and it comes up 50 west to
whatever the county road is that's near.
There is a fire hydrant right at the gate of the county garage. That could be looped, and it would probably create better water pressure out there for everybody. But I don't know if that's a quarter of a mile or a mile and a half. Nobody's given me dimensions. Nobody's given me sizes. So I encourage them and hope that they come up with the financing to finish the project. But if they don't, the city of Newcastle and the county has egg on our face.
Yeah,
I want the project to succeed, but I don't know how anybody could expect the city to pay for that. I mean,
At this point, it's almost like it's a shell building that needs completed, right? Like we've got it. Like it's an asset for the community, or it's close to being an asset for the community. But I don't know what the answer is either. But some folks have asked me about it, so I wanted to make sure we talked about it here today.
I don't want to see it fail, but the city is not going to put any ownership in it. I mean,
it would be a water customer, sewer customer for the city is what it would be.
Yeah.
Any comments on the expo side from you, Clay?
I 100% agree with Mayor York. We can't do it. It's not feasible on the city side.
All right. Walking paths. This is where I'm going to wrap up for myself here, because you guys have all got the.
Minutes past my bedtime.
Oh man, well, running for re-election's tough. Hey, you've been doing the media circuit. I've been watching. You've been talking to everybody.
He's an early riser.
Somebody owes me the last 800 feet of a walking path down to Woodbrook in Maine. I just want to know. I just want to know if somebody's going to make it a priority in the next 4 years to get sidewalks so that I can safely get back to. I could get all the way to downtown on a walking path or a sidewalk if somebody will just complete that. And the 200 people that are overtaxed for their sewer and water in White Estates all of a sudden can participate in some of this cool stuff.
Yeah, if you look at that at Southview, it stops at Southview. But if you look at the other side of Southview, the south side of Southview, there's like a 5-foot. You can't just stop it at the road. It really is on the south side, a 5-foot stretch that you have to be able to accept a handicap accessibility. So, I'm not promising you, but it is doable. So, if you talk to those homeowners and they want to help financially put a sidewalk in it, it's doable. But
I'm told by the council members that it was the plan originally, and then something happened. It didn't happen. But I just feel like there's so much potential. I know the city council has been talking about trying to make things more walkable, and we can get a lot more pedestrian traffic done if that can happen.
It's been a priority of the city council is to improve all of our sidewalks.
All right. Yeah. I got some people from Woodbrook in the chat right now saying the same thing. There's a lot of young families that could benefit from it. Kids that could walk to Riley School and the like, if we can just get that done. All right, let's move into final thoughts here. Chance to wrap anything up, anything we left out, priorities we didn't get to, ways to help out. I know you all got one weekend left of the campaign season here. We'll start with Mayor York and work our way around the room. Anything we need to clean up or finish up?
Talked out. No, I'm excited about where we're at as a city. I feel like that the enthusiasm downtown as far as businesses wanting to move back downtown, the events that we have downtown. I remember when the chamber said, we want to have the Christmas walk. We want to have choir singing at 1400 Plaza, and we still want to have the same choirs and singers on the courthouse lawn, and we want to close Broad Street. And I thought, oh my gosh, we used to have a huge crowd around the courthouse. And I thought, it's going to spread people out. It's going to look like we have nobody here. And actually, that's where you guys caught me, was at the clock.
Yep.
And it was wall-to-wall people from the plaza to the courthouse. So from the chamber to the EDC to we've got everybody. Main Street just got a $2 million grant that gets to go back into downtown municipality. And we can even put it in a building that the city owns. And it's the Murphy Building, which needs it desperately bad. It's the worst paint job in all of downtown right now. So we got a lot of good positive things going business-wise. We know that the families are going to move to Newcastle. Jack's Donuts. I'm so proud of Lee, I could almost cry. I used to go in Jack's Donuts 50 years ago and at 2 o'clock in the morning and hang out till 3 in the morning and gain 40 pounds that summer. But it's in the third generation, and I was talking to Jack today, and tears about came to his eyes that third generation, we've got a young man that's growing up in our community that stayed in the community and putting a major, major business in our community. So we got a lot of people believing in our community. We've got a lot of people private people investing money out of their own pocket in our community. So I feel like we're on a great path, and I'm excited about it.
Very good. Producer Zach, any comments? Anything we need to clean up?
I'm all for sidewalks as a runner.
That's because you're a runner.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my cross-country kids, actually not a bad section of sidewalk, bit it today, and it's neat blood running down his leg. But like, wasn't a bad section of sidewalk, but it was just sidewalks. You're saying
there's blood on the city's hands?
Yeah.
Is this the accusation that you're wrapping us up with?
No. There's blood on the field house floor, though.
But if you notice, there are a lot of sidewalks that we have to state mandated to get our intersections handicap accessible, not just downtown. It's all throughout the city. There are sidewalks all over the city.
Anytime the streets get repaved, they come through and do the ramps too.
There's even some roads that aren't being paved that we're fixing the sidewalks.
Those corners are looking good.
Are those those out of the city budget, or is there that's just you have to do it?
You have to do it.
Yeah.
All right.
They look good.
And it's the same thing when NDOT does any work; they come through before and they have to fix all those. Now, whether they fix them, we could call into question. If anyone wants to see how great NDOT is, go try to cross the street on 14th and Broad. Try to go all four corners. And realize that the city, I believe, you put the rails in.
If you walk all of those, you get an extra tenth of a mile walking up and down all the ramps that they built.
Yeah. And I think the rails got put in by the city because people like faceplate. No. Oh, did you not? You got NDOT to do that? The rails?
That was truly a fist fight.
Yeah, they didn't initially put them in there.
Our nose were touching.
But it took some coercion to get the rails in there. But no, other than that, I'm all about sidewalks, and people like to complain about the path that leads towards Jeremiah's neighborhood. But as a runner, it's actually nicer than the sidewalks to run on, and probably to ride a bike on. But other than that,
I think it's the greatest thing to happen on the south side of town. I just wish it went that last 800 feet so I could be included.
You could just
because my dogs and I have to dodge traffic on Main Street that doesn't quite go the 30 miles an hour that's posted. It's a little sketchy, especially over the culvert.
Other than that, Halloween seemed to go well. I was at the field house. They were doing candy out. Kids seemed to be doing well. I don't know how many kids my wife saw at the YMCA for their trunk or treat. And then Audubon was its normal party atmosphere. Other than that, hey, everybody, next week, get out and vote. Vote for people, especially locally. Vote for people. Don't vote for parties. They don't mean anything. And if anybody watched our show last week, you couldn't tell who, unless you saw their signs out front, you couldn't tell who the Republicans and the Democrats were, and it was mixed company, and everybody works together. So,
very good. Final thoughts for you, Mr. Clay?
Yeah, so I'm sitting here thinking the mayor mentioned downtown a lot, and that is one thing everybody talks about, how good things are looking and the vibrancy down there and the look and how it's been improved over the past few years in a tremendous way. I had a customer actually today ask me this question because obviously I've been talking a lot about the city finances. And they're like, well, so to get the city finances straightened up, are you going to like stop all the downtown stuff and then not be able to get elected a second term? But the good thing about the downtown area is they the organizations and individuals that have put that together have put it together in such a way it's become a TIF district. So tax increment financing district, where a lot of the tax money that is produced there through the property and such goes right back into that area. So the way it's been created, it's kind of a to a certain extent, along with the private investment, a self-sustaining situation that can continue to grow. So so I believe that we can work on the finance side and continue to keep what we're seeing downtown moving forward so that we can continue to get those compliments and those eyeballs on our city.
Very good. Final thought from me here real quick before we wrap up. Dakota could not make the show, but his perpetual question has been about chickens in the city and being able to raise poultry. And he got Mark Coger to cave at the beginning of this candidate series saying, fine, Dakota, whatever. As long as you take the phone calls, they're okay. So I want to hear from each of you guys if maybe there's a chance we could have some backyard poultry in the city. If it's not a no, I'll accept for Dakota. I will just accept it. Maybe it's not a straight up no. I'll start with Clay and hear from Greg.
Well, when I saw that last question, I immediately thought of chickens, right? Because I knew Dakota had talked about that for a long time.
It's his pet project. So
here's what
he claims it's why he moved to Spiceland.
You know, you don't know what the future holds, and so as we go forward, we'll evaluate the situation. And then we will deal with that issue when it comes up.
Sounds like a politician's answer, Greg. Anything on poultry and backyards? I know Greg Phipps is on the staff, and he's a big poultry guy. I don't know if you got a team of poultry advisors. Is there any chance of backyard chickens in the city of Newcastle in the future?
No.
No chance.
We had a pig problem, yeah. And had a lady that literally had a ramp for her pig to
hurt. It's a pop, in and out big of pop belly pig.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a great county. And if you want chickens, you need to live in the county. If you want chickens and you want to hatch some eggs, you need a rooster. And that rooster gets up before I do at 4:30 every morning.
What if we said hens only, no roosters?
That's the argument I hear.
Because you want eggs.
Then somebody needs to have the kahunas to say no. If you want to, the speed limit's 30 and you want to change it to 20, you don't compromise at 25. It's either a yes or a no.
I think we say hens only. If there's a rooster caught, it'll go straight to make it the judge's problem. And every 2 weeks we have an execution. Then they won't have a rooster problem.
Chicken dinner afterwards.
You just have fried chicken every couple weeks and they solve it. That's all right. I did that for Dakota. We thank you guys so much for being part of this.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yep. We will see you all next week.